So what events transpired to have, make him feel like he needed to bully other people and like take his stuff from them? Like, I just need to know that the psychology of Adebo.
We need a Friday prequel. We need well, now we can't do it. RIP Tiny Lister, but that would have been dope. Like,
yeah, a segment
or just story for Debo.
Look, a Criminal Minds like behavioral analysis.
Yeah, what transpired during his childhood to make him become this way?
The black man is just a microcosm of the aggressions of the bigger bully, the white man. Not playing.
You are now listening to the Duo Sports and Stuff Podcast. Here are your hosts, Deontay Epps and Dane Beasley.
Hello and welcome to episode 38 of the Duo Sports and Stuff Podcast. My name is Deontay Epps, joined by my best friend, my brother, my co-host, Dane. How are you doing, my guy?
What do you mean by that? Doing pretty good, man. Doing pretty good. Can't complain. Everything is good in Candyland. We just chilling, maxing and relaxing, working. You know, same old same. Raising kids.
As you said, the usual.
Yes, the usual. The number five with extra fry, and a large Powerade. A little ice. Powerade.
What'd you think about Marcus Spears? If you're now listening to us, we had Marcus Spears, ESPN analyst, former NFL defensive lineman, on last week. And man, it was a great conversation. Got a lot of great feedback from a lot of people about it, man. What'd you think about Marcus coming on?
If we could have every episode with some nuggets from the big swagger himself, I think we'd be better off. But fortunately, we had the opportunity to speak with him. And it didn't even feel like an interview. It just kind of just felt like we were just chopping it up. Somebody that you ain't seen in a long time, or somebody that's like, oh, you know, it's like, perfect example. We're freshmen and a graduating senior, and then we finally become seniors. And then that senior that we met when we were freshmen comes back during homecoming. We chop it up like, hey, that type of thing. That's what it felt like. That's what it felt like. Somebody that you only watched play. You can only dream of sharing the field with them, you know, type of deal. So it was cool. I'm really thankful he was sharing it.
Yeah. Real down to earth, real authentic guy, like, the same way he is on television as far as being real and himself. That's the way he was during the pod. So we appreciate Marcus coming on with us. Also appreciate everyone with the great and positive feedback and who enjoyed the episode and stuff like that. One thing we did not get to talk about, Dane, we recently partnered up with the Sports Podcast Network, and we've got a lot of questions about it as to which what it means for you, the listener. Not much. You get the same content from us. Really. Yeah, you're getting the same content, the same, you know, laughter, everything that we brought you so far in the past 37. And now with this episode, 38 episodes, still going to be able to bring on great guests when we can get them. Still going to talk our nerdy culture stuff, sports, football stuff, more in particular, football.
We still get to talk with our hands, too. We get to do all of this.
Yeah, talk with our hands. You know, that's how I do. But for us, you know, it's a partnership that we feel like it'll help grow our audience, bring more attention to our podcast, you know, because we think we're doing a pretty good job. And
some more community.
You know, we've been doing this for over a year now. What'd you say?
Some more community. From community.
Yeah, more community, more ears to the pod. That's all we're trying to do. And hopefully with this partnership, they can help us with great resources and things of that nature to get to where we want to go. So we're now a Blue Wire Hustle sports podcast. And as many of you know, Hustle Man. As many of you know, we do have new artwork, new cover art as well. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see the new YouTube banners around us. So, yeah, thank you to Blue Wire Hustle for that. And Dane, let's get right into the sports news.
The meat and taters.
Yeah, the meat and potatoes of sports. First news in the NFL, heading up to the draft, which is about a month away.
Wow.
Adam Schefter was one of the first ones to report the Dolphins trading their number 3 overall pick to the Niners for the 12th pick. a 2021 third round pick mm-hmm. and first round picks in 2022 mm-hmm. and 2023. And I think we had discussed via messages about that third quarterback. And I didn't realize till today, and that's my fault for that, that they're high on Trey Lance from North Dakota State. Yeah. And then I thought to myself, and I told you, I was like, man, that seems like a perfect fit for what he's shown mm-hmm. and what Mike Shanahan likes to do as far as his play calling, play scheme, and stuff like that. What'd you think about the trade?
Run heavy offense followed by a consistent dominant defense. That's take it from somebody who's part of the Sam Houston crew. We got smashed by North Dakota State more times than I can count in the Natty. So we know exactly what that formula for success looks like up there. And it's exactly that. That's not to say that Trey Lance or any of the other quarterbacks that have come from that university aren't capable of carrying the team, but they that complementary style of straight under center. You know, we're going to hand the ball a few times and we're going to hit you with a play action and bomb it deep. But I was telling you more so, I am hoping, well, not hoping, I'm gambling and saying that the 49ers don't make the right choice again. We've seen before when they've had a top three pick and they, you know, squandered it away. I wouldn't say squandered it away. We've seen what they've done with the top three pick in the past and how that pick or selection has paid its dividends or lack thereof. So it's going to be interesting to see with exactly. Nothing against the gentleman that they took it. I think it was it the second or fourth pick last time? I can't remember, but they took a defensive lineman. They didn't know what he was, either an edge or an interior guy. They took him and, you know, he of course is, you know, moved on to bigger and better things. So my anticipation is I'm hoping they don't make the same mistakes. But if they do make the same mistake and wasting on a defensive lineman, I will be in the background just chuckling like, but yeah, we'll see where it goes. Yeah.
It's also interesting to see what they'll do with Jimmy Garoppolo from now leading up into draft day and through the draft. Because, of course, any organization, Dane, they came out immediately after the trade, or at least I think the last few days said, we're not trading Jimmy Garoppolo. He is our guy.
They said, you know. You know what it almost reminded me of? When they say, cheating on you is the last thing I'll do. And it's like the very last thing to do is cheat on you. It's like they said, we have plans for him. Like, what the hell does that mean?
Right.
he's going to be the center, the cornerstone of the franchise, or we're going to use him to trade, you know, drive up his value in the next few games and then trade him in week six or something like that. Like, what is that supposed to mean? So,
right.
Jimmy G.
Because we've seen.
I think he has a no trade clause. He has a no trade clause for this year or next year. Or was it this year?
I'm not sure.
I looked it up. Sorry.
No, you're good. I was just going to say, you've seen like in the past, like if you're drafting a quarterback at three, say they draft the best quarterback available at three, you're not drafting a quarterback more than likely to sit a year, definitely not 2 years, maybe a year. But if you're drafting a quarterback top five, you want him to play as soon as possible. And I'm not sure Jimmy G would want to be in a position where, you know, he knows he's out the door. Like, give me an opportunity. I led you guys to the Super Bowl one, but give me an opportunity to go play for a place where, you know I'm the starter for long term. I know I feel comfortable here. You can lock me up long term. So we'll see how it plays out. I thought that was interesting for them to automatically come out and say it, and yet they're going to all these other quarterback pro days. They're trading up for the third pick. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, playing a little chess and checkers by the 49ers organization there.
No trade clause. He can't be traded unless, of course, it's a number of teams that he agrees to be traded to. So
okay.
He ain't going nowhere unless he agrees to, which is smart.
So
which
more than likely, smart. It would be a team where he'll be starting, a team where, you know, you get a chance to compete for a championship. So, yeah, that would make sense.
Absolutely.
I think if we don't see a trade draft day, probably during preseason and in camp, that you might see a deal go down. I wouldn't want to see, because Jimmy G is how old? Like, he's still maybe early 30s.
He's considerably young. Football years, he's still position wise as well. He's still a young guy.
Right. And being young
is a 30-year-old talking here.
Yeah. Right. You don't want to be a quarterback like mentoring your replacement at the age of 30, right? So
29 years old.
Yeah, there you go. You don't want to be a 29-year-old mentor quarterback to a guy that's going to replace you. Like, you don't see that. So no, nobody wants that. Right. Somewhere in the future, these guys are probably going to work out a deal. And as you mentioned, the no trade clause is going to work out something, a place where he can go and get a chance to compete. But the 49ers weren't willing and dealing or done willing and dealing, Dane. They got a little sneaky and hit up called Philadelphia up on the line and the Dolphins. It was the Dolphins. Traded that 12th pick and their 2022 first round pick for the Eagles 6th pick. Yeah,
look, I know a lot of Philadelphia Eagle fans, and it was such a joy to my heart seeing them so pissed off and mad at the fact of the possibility of, you know, getting a Devonta Smith or getting a Kyle Pitts or getting one of those nice number one receivers. It was fun watching them be tormented like that in the comments. But honestly, it could be a win-win for them. Not only that, because their history of drafting, you know, in the top 10 hasn't been that well. Call it what you want, but the whole Carson Wentz thing didn't work out the way they wanted it to. But on the positive side, you get multiple first round picks next year. And this draft is going to be with all the quarterbacks that we anticipate they're going to be drafted in the top 10. It's going to push some of that talent all the way down. And they'll pick 12. So they'll be fine. They'll be great. You got those two picks next year. I think it's two picks, two or three first round picks next year. Was it two?
I'm so mad. I'm glad you brought that up, but I'm so upset because I saw a tweet that said they could get another first round pick from the Colts if Carson Wentz plays to a certain par.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I can't remember, but
let's be real. Let's be realistic here, guys.
Okay, go ahead.
That man ain't playing a full season. I'm sorry, but history is showing us this man is
behind the Colts O-line, though. Got a good O-line.
Offensive line, I mean, is only half the problem. Well, never mind. Go ahead.
Say what's on your chest.
I'm just gonna let things play out the way that they will. It doesn't matter who your offensive line is. If you can't decide to get the ball out of your hands, and especially when it's predicated on quick route patterns and things like that, if you can't get the ball out of your hands quickly, then you can't, there's only so much blame you could put on the offensive line. And then, of course, running yourself into so many sacks, it's not a good lick either. But, you know, he's got a fresh new place to start, brand new number, brand new scheme. Well, a familiar scheme, if you will. So, you know, here's the hoping that it all works out for him. But I don't think we've seen the end of Mr. Carson Wentz. But I don't know if I were a betting man, I wouldn't bet to say that they're going to get an additional first round pick because of his playtime that he's exceeded. I don't think that's happened, unfortunately.
Right. That's a smart move, it's sensible to think that, because obviously he hasn't finished the year healthy the last couple of years. So we'll see. I think the combination of the Colts offensive line, though, at least will keep him upright more than he's used to seeing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that could play in a possibility to that.
Shout out to Quentin Nelson one time.
Yeah, Quentin Nelson holding down. Last week, we asked Marcus Spears about what he thought was the biggest offseason move, and he told us that he thought the Matt Stafford move to the Rams was the biggest move. You know, he's always been in Detroit.
Yeah.
Always, you know, Detroit hasn't always had the top-tier teams, but Matt Stafford has put up numbers. Take Matt Stafford, put him in Sean McVay's offense with the weapons around him and that defense. He has them going to the NFC Championship game. And well, we won't dive into offseason questions until maybe next week, a little closer till we get to the draft. We do have a lot of free agents left, Dane. You had tweeted a while back about, I know you tweeted a long list of like receivers in particular that were available. I know some of them have signed since then.
Most of them are still available, though.
Oh, they're still available. Okay, cool.
No, not all of them. Just saying some of them are still available. Oh, go ahead. Okay. My bad, brother.
No, I was just going to ask you, out of the guys that are available now, could be receiver, could be defender, safety, quarterback, whatever. Who do you think is the best available?
You see, Deontay, that there is a tangled web we have here. Who's supposed to be the best available, I would assume, is Jadeveon Clowney. We're all aware of the talent that he was when he came into the league, but it hasn't cashed out the way it, you know, it's supposed to by now. And that's okay. Just play the NFL is home to plenty of second opportunities and third opportunities and fourth opportunities. But to answer your question, I don't know. I guess it just all depends on the teams that need something or what type of team needs some sort of depth or what type of team needs some sort of veteran leadership, because that's all you're going to find at this point or this late in the season or this late in the offseason. It's not late, but it's like, you know, most of your tier one guys and tier two guys have pretty much inked those deals. And right now, I don't know. What about you? What you think?
I go with Clowney just because, I mean, I feel like he still has a lot left in the tank. He's 28 years old. He's proved, well, maybe not the last few years that he can stay healthy, but at that age, I mean, he's one of the youngest guys that are still available. And we've seen in the years past that he could be a freak on the field causing havoc. I think a team like Cleveland that has Myles Garrett coming off one end, and then if you have like Clowney coming in on the other end on passing situations, like if you're an AFC North quarterback, Baker Mayfield,
another for your life,
Ben Roethlisberger that doesn't really or really can't move, you know, that's going to be happening. So I think he did visit the Browns not too long ago, but I think pairing him up with another significant pass rusher, I don't think maybe like like Denver doesn't really need another pass rusher, but like have like a team with another dominant pass rusher, maybe like the Rams with the Aaron Donald that can cause havoc up the middle. Maybe they could take a look at him. Like, I think he would feed off of not being able to be double teamed, you know, and a team that has a guy that is a serious, like number one D lineman on that team where he doesn't
they can attract two attention to two.
Right. Right. So I think a fit like that, I mean, he's still 28. And still showing flashes, even when he was with Seattle. So I'm going to roll with Clowney on that one.
That was a little difficult to answer right now. If we were to answer that question or ask that question maybe like a week and a half ago, we might be able to shell out a little bit more conversation. Yeah. But that one just seems like the dead giveaway.
Right.
You know,
right.
So we apologize to the viewers that feel like we just, you know, not disagreeing or going back and forth about anything. It's just, hey, these guys agree about everything. It's not the case. I'm sorry.
Well, I know we might disagree on this next one.
Look, I hate this guy with all of my being, but we have to agree on this one, man.
I got your favorite conversation coming up next, bro.
Is that right?
Yes. NFL going from 16 games a week, or excuse me, a year. 16 games a week is insane.
I'm like, damn.
You play three games a day.
What kind of AAU tournament is this? You know how much death would be associated with that? 16 games in 1 week?
16 games a week, man. This is getting crazy.
The revenue.
16 games.
I mean, you get up in the middle of the night to get a glass of water. At 2 o'clock, you go turn on the TV. There's going to be somebody playing.
Everybody playing triple headers a day. No, but the NFL has decided to go to 17 games. Your thoughts, Dane? I already know you're ready to open up the book and, it's, you know, dumb. Break it down.
It's dumb. Put it this way. It doesn't make any sense. Why would you put this uneven number on the books? Two, we're not sure if it's sustainable, the profit, or we're not sure if it's sustainable over a 2-year period based on how drastically the cap is going down from this particular season because of the pandemic. Another point, this doesn't make any sense because you got to think about all the record book changes that are going to happen at the end of the season. Granted, one of those games is going to be one of those games where a lot of the starters aren't going to be playing. That's one thing. But you're always going to have the bottom of the division dwelling teams that are going to be chasing stats at the end of the season. And a lot of that stuff is in jeopardy. Like, how do you move forward? Let's say this is the first time we changed the number of games being played. This is what, like 74, if I'm not mistaken? Something like that, 72 or 74. So it's like all the greats that have played in the NFL, all those records that have seemed like unattainable, now it seems like that goal is being, you know, the goals are being moved to be like, now you have a chance to, you know, rush for over 2,000 and, you know, 49 yards in one season because there's an extra game. And then on top of that, it's like, what about the players? Like, we know this benefits the owners. It's, you know, an extra few, you know, a few million dollars in their pockets. But it's like, at some point in time, we knew that 16 games was too much. So much so that everyone was very relieved when the preseason was pretty much canceled, right? So essentially what they're doing is doing away with one preseason game, just having three preseason games. But still, you're asking probably the top, what, less than 1% athletes in the world to add on one more game and probably one of the most violent games that we've seen. Or no, Christ, the most violent game that we've seen in our time. Like, that's asking a lot. And it just speaks to just how crappy this Players Association is for even agreeing to something like this or allowing themselves to be strong-armed by ownership. So I don't like it. I hate it for the players, but at the same time,
it was something that you kind of saw coming. I know there was rumblings about it months ago, and then they just struck that deal with all the big networks, ESPN, ABC, CBS, and Amazon, the TV deals and packaging. We've talked about it a lot on this podcast for months about the different revenues as far as how the NFL is going about, you know, making up for this season where, you know, they probably lost more money than they ever had before. And not saying this is one of the reasons that they're doing this, but I think it plays a part into the fact that they're trying to create more revenue, trying to figure out ways to do that kind of thing. And of course, the players putting their body on the line for another game, where a dangerous game, as we've seen over the past few years, life-changing, life-altering injuries. Players aren't down for it. Specifically, Alvin Kamara was one of the first players to come out and tweet how he thought it was dumb. I think they still have to vote on it, but all the reporters and media are saying that it's going to pass. So, and it's going to start this upcoming season, and they already have the teams planned out they're going to play. And I mean, at this point, it's just
stupid.
Yeah, it's
and you know the worst part about this, Deontay. The worst part about it, I don't think this is the tip of the iceberg. I think this is just a gateway to get to an 18-game season.
What makes you say that?
17 is just such an odd number. It'd be different if they invited the 17th game and, you know, they give everybody a second bye week. Still 16 games. You know, you have two bye weeks now. It'd be different if that was the case, but this isn't that. This isn't that. This seems like, I don't know, 17 just doesn't sit. This is weird. This is a very weird thing, but I can only imagine. I can only imagine, but we'll see.
It's very telling, like, because we just got through a season, and we spoke with Marcus Spears about that as well, as far as the way they managed it or whatever. But it was a tough season to get through, and then to jump from the tolls and the toughness and, you know, the hoops and hurdles that everyone had to go through to get this season completed, to just jump to a 17-game season that season directly after that one is kind of a big jump. So it'll be interesting to see for sure. But we'll figure out what happens as far as injuries. I mean, it's always an extra opportunity and chance for something bad to go wrong. So we just hope it doesn't lead to that. We talked about the Niners trading up for the third pick. That second pick belonged to the New York Jets, and a lot of analysts' mock drafts seem to believe that Zach Wilson out of BYU would be that guy selected. You and I went back and forth through the messages talking about Zach Wilson. I feel like he's a decent, legitimate quarterback, and you not so much?
Not so much. Look, here's the thing. We've seen the arm talent, we've seen the athleticism, we've seen the can-do winning nature from a lot of these quarterbacks that are coming out of this particular draft. We've seen that. And of course, because of this, the way this media works is you get one guy's season. I have this theory. There's one guy's season that gets propped up and elevated just because of a nice little throw against air. And this year, it just happens to be Zach Wilson. We've seen the way that this man played when he sees a legitimate defense. We've seen that. Right. And this is my take. This is Dane B's thoughts. But there is nothing that Zach Wilson is going to be capable of doing if we're seeing Sam Darnold out there running for his life, a seasoned pro at that. Now, granted, we don't know what Sam Darnold is, right? But at what point do you have to try to continue to build around what you have there before you, you know, willing to throw it away and try the same exact thing that you thought you found what the first time? They got they drafted Sam Darnold from USC, and I remember seeing the little Photoshop deal they had on the newspaper about him being Broadway Joe, or you know, not Broadway Joe,
like Joe Namath, Broadway Joe.
No,
you said it right.
Yeah, Joe Namath. Yeah, that's yeah. Broadway Joe. Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know why I was thinking. Okay, but I was like, okay, you know, a lot of news or a lot of cities, they get, you know, a little ahead of themselves with the superlatives early, especially that one. But then you do the same thing with this guy just a few years later. It's like, at what point are we going to acknowledge the elephant in the room? Like, maybe you're not that good at
tell the audience what you called it, though. And that's why I had to back Zach Wilson up. You called it something.
Oh, shoot. What did I call it?
Said Manziel hype.
The Manziel level hype. Yeah, we all remember the Manziel.
For our listeners, I had to defend Zach Wilson because what we saw. I mentioned what we saw with Johnny Manziel was
I wasn't comparing it to the maturity. Yeah. The maturity of Johnny Manziel. That's a whole difference. I don't know. I don't know anything about Zach Wilson off the field. Yeah.
Okay.
However, we saw how everything played out in Cleveland and. That could have very well been Dallas. It could have been Johnny Manziel to the Dallas Cowboys that year. But the thing about it is we've seen this type of hype machine get behind a player and it end horribly. And you hate to see that. You hate to see any type of pressure being put on any type of player. But this is the nature of the league. You get drafted in the top 10, or correct, you get drafted in the first round, there's already high expectation of you. And you're a quarterback. That's even more so. And then you're going to the New York media?
In New York, yeah.
Listen.
Yeah.
The New York media, I hope this kid is ready because he is going to be expected to turn water into wine. Like, so we're going to see. I hope the best for him. But if I'm a betting man, I'm going to say this thing is going to end up the same way. We're going to look at 4 or 5 years from now, and they're going to be looking at the next, you know, top five quarterback that they can Photoshop on the front of the New York Times, whatever magazine it was that I saw that in. So
I'm gonna go opposite of you on this one, my guy. So there, I agree with you to a point that if you put a quarterback in a situation, like a bad situation, you're setting them up to fail. I think they're doing it a little different with this. If they decide to select the quarterback, which a lot of people think they do, they've surrounded. I feel like they're going to give him more of an opportunity than they did with Sam. And they have a new coach, defensive-minded coach, that's putting a talented defense together, coming from the Niners, Robert Saleh. Adam Gase shouldn't have been a head coach again for this team. I think putting Adam Gase on that team was not ideal for the team. Obviously not ideal for Sam Darnold. The guy is not head coach material. So I feel like we would kind of see.
He has a scrub. He can't play.
he can't play. But I think I think the situation would have played out differently had it been another head coach there, not Adam Gase. So I'm not going to say they would go to the playoffs, but they wouldn't be picking at top of the draft. So I think
they wouldn't have fumbled away Trevor Lawrence is what you're saying.
Agree. Exactly.
There ain't no way that shouldn't have happened. You should have never put your team in a position to lose that number one pick. Now, go ahead. I'm getting ahead of myself.
I just think having a defensive-minded coach that I think is ready for the big time. They hired Adam Gase after he had got fired from the Dolphins. So what does that kind of tell you? Like, you know, that's just not something that's going to work.
But you can only go up?
Like, exactly. Like, the next guy has to be better than what you've seen the past few years. So I don't think we'll see a jump for the Jets to go to the playoffs, but I think putting Zach Wilson in a position where he can succeed with a coach that is, you know, ready for, well, we don't know if he's ready. I, in my opinion, think he's ready to lead this team to success. It's way better than what they had before. So,
it's a fair analysis, yeah. My boy.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So we were talking about draft guys, and for the past few years, for the audience that don't know, Dane has always been one of the guys that always finds the sleepers. Dane loves the draft. He finds those guys that, you know, everybody's not talking about. So every week from now until the draft, Dane is going to have his own segment where he breaks down one sleeper from the offense, one sleeper from the defense. And you know what? I'm hearing for the first time with you listeners what the name of this segment is going to be, because Dane has not told me yet. So, Dane, you have the floor, my guy.
I got you. So without further ado, you've seen your general managers, your owners, your scouting presidents and such. You've seen them make their moves. But now it's my turn, me, general homeboy, to help you find these sleepers. Okay? So, and here's the thing. I don't find the sleepers, Deontay. The sleepers, they find me. So,
yeah,
we're gonna get this thing cracking right off the bat. First
let's
guy,
get it popping.
Let's get it popping. First guy I love because he pretty much is not gonna have a position when it comes to the NFL. But it is no other than from Washington, Elijah Molden. So they had a pretty decent or interesting secondary setup or defensive setup there in Washington with, you know, a 5 DB set. Sometimes he was playing in the nickel. Sometimes he's playing in safety. And of course, he's obviously, the best way to make the team in the NFL is by special team. So that's going to be a given. But you got a guy that's very instinctive. He's got really good ball skills, pause, and he has plenty of anticipation. So there's plenty of opportunities. I'm not going to pick on him. I'm not going to pick on it too much, but if you really want to see a really good game, go ahead and check out that BYU game. You can see him all over the field doing his thing. If you're a defensive guy,
playing against a top quarterback.
Exactly, or so they say. So you'll see that. I'm not going to spend too much time on him because his film will speak for itself when you see him. Second guy, offense. Plenty of people know this guy. Deontay, you might know this guy. He comes from University that wears green in Texas. North Texas.
I knew you were going to do me like
Jalen
that.
Jalen Darden. So, yeah, I had to build that up to make you think that it was one way, but it's the other way. Jalen Darden, this guy is about 169 pounds soaking wet, holding on to a loaf of bread. But that if you need somebody that's electrifying, if you need somebody that can run all the routes on your route tree, somebody that you want to get in open space, that is your guy. I like to call him a poor man's, or not even, I'm not going to disrespect him like that. I'm calling him a diet Miko Hardman, okay? Because he's lightning in a bottle. You get that boy a screen, give him a reverse, you get him a stop route. It's must-see TV every time he gets the ball. So, Deontay, ask me, what do you and this gentleman have in common? Just go ahead and ask me.
What do I, Deontay Epps, host of the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast, have in common with this guy?
I'm glad you asked that. Deontay, in your primes, both of you guys were touchdown scoring machines. This man had 19 touchdowns last year in one season. Okay. Now, of course, people are going to say, well, it's because he wasn't playing in a big power five. He wasn't playing in this. I get that.
Of course they would.
Touchdowns are touchdowns. Exactly. Touchdowns are touchdowns, especially when you turn on the tape and you see this man. Specifically, I would like if this is your first time hearing about this young man, the best thing you could possibly do is turn on the tape, YouTube, Middle Tennessee, or I think it was UTEP, and he went off. Great variety of routes he was running. You got bubble screens, you got stop routes, you got comebacks, you got go routes, you got drags, doing the whole nine. But electrifying guy, I'm really rooting for him. Of course, since he is undersized, he is gonna, you know, probably gonna fall to, you know, second day or third day. But whatever team gets him, they're gonna get a nice guy. He's solid. He's fast as hell. I should have led with that. He's fast as hell. Well, obviously, when I said the diet Miko Hardman comparison, that was a dead giveaway.
Yeah,
you turn on the film, you're gonna know exactly who he is. And this is my last, I'm gonna end on this note. If you are a defensive back and you're somehow listening to this podcast, you have a moral obligation every single game to identify the guy who is wearing what jersey number, Deontay.
If you're a defensive back, number one.
If you're a defensive back, number, exactly. You always look for number one, because that more than likely, 95% of the time, that's going to be the best player on the team. And of course,
that guy's fat. Saw-
That brother's a blood. No, yeah. So that guy's fast. So, I mean, he's going to, whenever you turn on the tape, you'll see he'll jump off the screen, but he's going to make you miss. But that's my wrap up. General Homeboy signing out.
I love it, man. General Homeboy, every episode until the draft at the end of next month, Dane. I love it, my guy.
Appreciate you. Appreciate you, man.
Episode two, Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Man, say.
Man, okay. We gonna rap. Okay.
Yeah.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier, right? So episode one, for those that, okay, spoiler alert. I'm going too fast. Spoiler alert.
if you ain't seen an episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, you do not need to continue with this podcast.
Nope.
Okay. Deontay, take it away one more time. Tell him one more time before you say anything.
All right, so everybody's gone that didn't listen to the episode. Now everybody that's here, listen to me. This show is incredible already, two episodes in, because they're doing something that the MCU has never done before. I mean, they did it with WandaVision, of course, with everything they did, but this show is already freaking relatable, man. I'll start with episode one a little bit, and then we'll just wrap back and forth. So this show, if you don't know, is set 6 months after the events of Avengers Endgame. And as you know, at the end of the movie, Steve Rogers gives the shield to Falcon. Sam Wilson. Sorry, his name slipped me. And so episode one picks up right kind of maybe a few days after that, I'm assuming. Right.
Yeah. So they're the same thing.
Right. So they're at the museum honoring Steve Rogers for everything he's done for the country. They didn't say whether he was dead or not. Notice they just said he's gone. But Sam decides that he's not worthy enough to be Captain America. Steve Rogers is Captain America. He's not Captain America. He gives the shield over to the government, and they're gonna, well, we assume that they put the shield in a museum.
That's the assumption. But it appears we've been hoodwinked.
We'll get to that.
Tricked.
We'll get to that. Yes, of course. it dives into a lot of character building. We switch to Bucky, and he is talking to a therapist about everything that he's gone through in his life, and the therapist that seems to be government issues, I'm assuming, like the government gave him this therapist to...
It's part of his plea deal.
Right, part of his plea deal with the Sokovia Accords. Right, the president pardoned him with everything for saving the universe, I'm assuming, with Endgame. I think it's really interesting how, and you can do this in a show rather than a movie, you could dive more into the characters because it's episodic, but diving into who he was, like, there was an interesting line, Dane, and I wonder if you remember from episode one where Bucky had said he had spent, the only time he spent not fighting in a war when he was in Wakanda for a little time. Mm-hmm. Other than that, he's always been fighting, whether he was... Like under Hydra control or not, he's always been fighting. And so I was like, man, that is true. So like he's finally not fighting, but at the same time, he doesn't know what to do.
He doesn't know. He doesn't know what a civilian life is like. He has no idea. There's a lot of parallels between what we see. What we see right now, what we've been seeing for the longest, is when our troops are guys who have, you know, blood, sweat and teared overseas to protect the freedoms that we hold dear to our hearts. When they come back here, they're still trying to assimilate. They're trying to get back into some sort of normalcy. And, I can't imagine how complicated that is. And we're seeing that. We're seeing Marvel trying to show us that this man trying to transition back into civilian life. And he's still having to deal with those ghosts in the closet. And the one thing that stuck with me is it sucks because this man was literally woken up, brainwashed and sent to go kill. And he's literally sitting in the passenger seat of assassination after assassination after assassination. At some point in time, that takes a toll on your psyche. And right after he's done with his mission, he comes back and they put him right back on ice. So it's like...
literally a weapon. For decades and decades,
he's told, this is what you're here for. And now, at the drop of a dime, he doesn't have that luxury of being, brainwashed. Or I wouldn't say it's a luxury. He has the luxury of not being brainwashed anymore. Back to you, Deontay.
Right. And so basically at the end of episode one, the government has a new Captain America. And this guy that looks like a budget great value Captain America. And we find out in episode two.
We got Captain America at home.
I want a McDonald's Captain America.
We got a McDonald's at home. We got the great value off brand.
Yeah. We find out later in episode two that his name is John Walker. And so that dives in, that goes directly into episode two as far as introducing this guy, former captain of the football team, former sergeant, whatever, captain in the military, U.S. Army. He has all these accolades. They give him the big Captain America rollout, as I put in my notes right here. And it's like, it's funny to me because it's like, I feel like they would do something like this in real life as far as, how can we make this guy the most likable character? We'll put him on Good Morning America and we'll give him a HBCU band. You know what I'm saying?
It's funny as hell because it's Marvel/Disney's way of mocking how these entities do. They try to pander to black people.
Yeah.
But, hey, let's get him in a Sprite commercial and throw some hip hop in the background. Yeah. That'll get him. It's the same thing they did. They gave him a black partner. They had HBCU marching band coming through there. And it's like, come on, y'all. But they played it perfectly. It set it up to where you hate this guy's guts before you even know what he's about. They did that perfect. So
that was the first thing that came to my mind. Yeah, bro. That was the first thing that came to my mind. Bro. I was like, man, they think they slick. I was like, banana in the middle pipe.
That's just great writing. They knew what they was doing. They knew what they was doing.
Right.
Oh, man. Okay.
But in episode two, they get a little deeper, gets a little, more into the realism as far as mirroring what is going on in the real world. We go ahead, Dane. Go ahead.
I'm gonna interrupt you for one second. we ain't get to talk about this, but it pissed me off. And again, spoiler alert, my man went to go in episode one. My man went to with his sister to go to try to get a business loan, little small bank loan. And he was denied. And it immediately brought me back. I was like, wait a minute. We just watched the WandaVision. Well, this man is basically a mannequin with an Apple Watch for a heart. He got a whole plot of land for his, you know, for his future wife and future family. And this man, he's like less than, what, 3 or 4 years old? And he was able to do that, but we can't get the brother a business loan to help get the boat off the ground. I was like, come on, bro. I mean, it kind of, I don't know if anybody who's been through the house buying process. I mean, it's a headache and a half, but you know, the hoops and the qualifications you got to get to even, you know, to get something. I don't know. Maybe Vision has a hookup somewhere at the Bank of America and they hooked them up with a spot. But I don't know. But it just was like, come on, man. The brother taking the L again. But it's just, again, that's Marvel kind of highlighting not only just the plight of this guy being black, but just the idea of him being a veteran and the difficulties they face with even something as small as getting a small business loan. So, again, I needed to touch on that before you went to
that's the perfect
potatoes of episode two.
Yeah, so. Perfect segue, my guy, because in episode two, they dive even more into the racial undertones of everything in the MCU and how it mirrors the real world. Bucky introduces Sam to Isaiah Bradley through the comics, we know. But for those that don't know, he was the first black Captain America after Steve had, correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, after Steve went on ice, correct?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we find out in the show, you know, we don't know necessarily how he got put in jail, but he got put in jail for 30 years after serving as Captain America. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure we'll dive more into that, but we're kind of going to get into the meat and potatoes of, okay, the racial undertones, flashbacks, but there's something that happened that put this man that was black Captain America per se into jail for 30 years. Yeah. And right after that.
And I think it was like in the comics, he either stole Cap's shield or he impersonated Cap. I can't remember what it was, but it was, I should have looked this up. I didn't even think to look it up, but my bad. Apologize for poor research, but yeah, we about to see them hop into it. And of course it gets into the illegal experiments that are, you know, not only done on, you know, humans themselves, but specifically targeted with a lot of black people, you know, a lot of black people in their skepticism and distrust with the healthcare system because of, you know, some testing, some unethical things that took place back in the day. Yeah. But that kind of surfaced with, you know, what Isaiah said, which is kind of like, oh shit, they really going into this, like Disney, Marvel, they really throwing some slugs at the government right now.
Yeah. Probably the most telling scene that mirrors what's going on in the world today after they come out of Isaiah Bradley's home.
Yeah.
They're walking in the street and the Baltimore police show up and basically ask Bucky if this guy is bothering you, talking about Sam. And Sam's like, no, I don't have any ID on me. Mirroring how, you know, way too often black to get harassed in America. So, it's just a little taste of it, but it was real. It hit close to home, you know. Yeah. So
it's subtle. It's small enough to you get the idea, or a question. It's big enough for you get the idea. Small enough to not take your whole attention off the plot of the entire episode. So it's like, damn, we just seen him witness, you know, the trauma that Isaiah had, and then him step outside and bam.
Caleb Moore.
So it's it's just,
and you know, a lot of people don't like when stuff in the real world combines with what they think is pleasure or leisure and stuff that they like to watch as far as this Dame. But for us,
not everybody's fortunate enough to be able to escape from stuff like that.
How does that make you feel seeing the MCU dive into real world issues like this?
One, it made me appreciate them trying to touch on that topic itself, because it's a real thing. And then two, it kind of made me like, you know what, they're going to catch a lot of heat for this, from people who don't want to see that on the TV. It's like, oh, that's not that big of a deal, I get pulled over by the police too and I'm okay as long as you comply and blah 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 blah, you'll get that. And of course, you'll get, excuse me, which you can't blame. You get a lot of people, a lot of black people who are, you know, that have or are triggered by that type of stuff, seeing that in their media when they don't want to, because it just brings up just, you know, it's that's an open wound that won't be closed for a long time for right. a lot of us. So that being a trigger for a lot of people, I can see how that could go wrong and rub a lot of people the wrong way. But I think it was subtle enough to be like, you know what, we're aware of what's going on and we want to dive into this as an issue, you know, to some shape or form to start a dialogue. So,
right. And I mean, people that don't want to see it, they're going to be even more upset because there's more projects down the line where you're going to have gay characters, bisexual characters. And I mean, if you don't like it, you just don't watch it. You know what I'm saying? So, I really enjoyed this episode.
Keep it moving.
Keep it pushing, man. One thing I did note, Dane, and tell me if I'm diving into this too much.
What's that?
When we find out that, you know, Sam, not Sam, Bucky knew a previous black Captain America and they fought. Do you think that's why he was okay with Sam getting the shield from Steve? You know, he does that little head nod at the end in Endgame where he's like when Steve pops up from time travel, he does his little head nod, like
him and Sam look at each other like,
yeah, he tells him to go ahead.
Yeah,
I was like, oh,
I think
that brought me back to that moment.
I think you touched on a good thing because we're seeing that 50 years ago or 60 years ago when Isaiah was deemed, you know, Captain America to take up the mantle, America wasn't ready. And then we're seeing now in the present where Sam thinks America isn't ready, so I'm not going to do it. But Bucky's like, no, it's time. Like, I am, you know, 110, right? 100, no.
Oh, he's, something
he's
like
old.
That.
He's old. I've been around here long enough to know that it's time. This needs to happen as a, like, as an ally, this needs to happen. And not only that, but he's reassuring. He said this, if you turn down this opportunity to not only wield a symbol of what's supposed to be, you know, hope and freedom and justice, if you turn down this symbol, then that means Steve was wrong about selecting you. And of course, he said, if he was wrong about you, then he's definitely wrong about me, because you're as innocent as they come. And me, I'm guilty as charged. So if he's wrong about you,
and I've done all these terrible things,
even though it wasn't his fault, he's completely brainwashed, but he still carries that guilt, that burden. So I think that's his way of saying, like, of seeing more in Sam than Sam sees in himself, or Sam is willing to accept, which I understand. You know, he has to go through a period of acceptance and or these stages of, I guess, denial that, you know, he is supposed to be the new Cap. But I guess it, you know, just comes with those expectations and knowing that society probably won't accept him the way that they accepted Steve, which is, you know, normal for anybody in that circumstance to, you know, try to go through those different stages of grief. Well, not grief, but stages of, I don't know what you want to call it. Somebody's got the right phrase or word for it, but I can't figure out the right vernacular, if you will, to say to match that particular phrase. The right jargon,
right? Just getting past, I would say, like getting past certain situations and stuff like that. But man, episode one and two definitely hit close, and I'm sure they're gonna dive more into that. We got Zemo coming into the fray next episode. Ooh. So it's gonna get even more legit.
How they gonna pull that
more
off?
Fire coming from Marvel.
How they gonna get it?
I don't know, man.
How they gonna do that? Like,
I don't know. Maybe they can get government clearance. Well, they're not working for the government. Right. I don't know.
I think we might get a special guest appearance this next episode, because somebody's gonna have to come through with a major pull, because they're not finna break into one of the highest supermax prisons in MCU to spring this dude free. But we know that he's gonna be free because.
So who do you think it's gonna be?
It'd have to be somebody that's up there. I don't want to say
Ross.
Maybe Ross or he's supposed to be dead. So I was going to say
that's the only government guy that they've introduced. Maybe it might be a new character.
I was going to say Fury, but Fury is supposed to be dead to the world. So that's not going to work unless it's some sort of scroll or something. Like,
no,
maybe a scroll. So I don't
know.
Could be Ross. I don't know. But that would be interesting. Because Ross was trying to scold him at the beginning of Infinity War when they escaped from, you know, getting killed out there in the train station. Mm-hmm. And when they came back, yep. he was like, you know, Roddy, arrest those fugitives. And so, I don't know.
Right.
Might be some hard feelings there. I don't know.
We'll definitely see coming up in episode 3. And Dane, I love this podcast, bro. We're back at it once again. For the listeners, we're coming every Tuesday, man. Every Tuesday on your way to work. Every Tuesday if you get off work. Yeah,
do your lunch open break. Up your phone. You have a lunch break.
Yeah, even your lunch break. Just open it up. Put your boys in your ear. You know what I'm saying? We're coming live every Tuesday. You know, in your phone, well, waking up.
You from Baltimore. You said we coming live every Tuesday.
No. But every Tuesday you can expect new episodes from the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. Of course, you can listen to us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and all your other DSPs. Dane, you got anything you want to say to the listeners before we get out of here, my guy?
Man, nothing much, man. Just make sure you drink your water every day and wash behind your ears. And you good in my book.
Continue to be safe, healthy, yeah, of course. Wear your mask, all that good stuff.
Do that. Because we're trying to get out of this pandemic. I don't know about y'all, but I'm ready for my kid
definitely
to socialize with other kids. And, you know.
Yeah.
Y'all handle y'all business because we handle ours. We staying in the house. We don't be doing none of the extra stuff. So
I hear you, my guy. For my co-host, Dane Beasley, I am Deontay Epps. You can listen to all of our episodes on any digital streaming platform or our website, www.theduosportsandstuffpodcast.com. We out.
And I'm gone.